Welcome to American Indian Living, a program developed by the Native Education and Health Initiative to improve and enhance the health of people throughout the Native communities. American Indian Living is hosted by Dr. David DeRose, a board-certified specialist in both internal medicine and preventive medicine. Dr. DeRose has a wide range of experience with Native health issues, and he's ready today to help you learn more about your health. Here's Dr. DeRose.
Welcome to American Indian Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. Today we're speaking about an issue that is so important throughout Indian country, and I don't need to mention that. We're talking about the health of women. This is something that continues to get more attention throughout the medical research community. There are more and more studies that are looking at women and health factors. Of course, medical research in the majority culture has largely been dominated by studies of men for many, many years. And so as this change is happening, really, throughout research circles in the United States and beyond, it's especially encouraging to realize that exciting things are happening in Indian country and have been happening that have really given priority to the health needs of women. Today, we're going to be talking with Pamela Iron. She is the executive director of the National Indian Women's Health Resource Center in Oklahoma. Pam, it's wonderful to have you with us on today's show.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's exciting to me to have you on the show, Pam. I know many of our listeners know of you and of your work. The National Indian Women's Health Resource Center is very highly regarded throughout Indian country. But for some of our listeners, perhaps, that may not have heard of the organization that that you direct, just give us a little bit of background about your organization.
Really began out of a national advisory committee. In 93, Dr. Trujillo of the Indian Health Service actually formed an Indian Women's Advisory Group, both of federal women and also tribal women. And through this process, we advised the Director of Indian Health Service on women's health issues and really worked for the integration of like a women's software package so healthcare needs could be tracked. Before that, there was no way that Indian Health Service even tracked this. Hmm. We actually realized in 1998 that there needed to be a nonprofit organization because there was a lot of volunteer work done, but there really needed to be staff to carry out all of the needs that that had been identified. So we became a nonprofit in 1998, and we established our vision, which was we envision American Indian and Alaska Native women living in balance within the sacred circle of life. We also have a mission that is to assist American Indian and Alaska Native women in achieving and maintaining optimal health and cultural well-being for themselves, their families, and their communities. So basically, there's 12 board members that actually work in their communities and assist with the programming needs that are identified, and they represent the 12 Indian Health Service areas. And then we added some other individuals to the board because we needed some different perspectives from young women. We have a young woman that representative, and that's from the age of 25 to 35. And then we have a youth that is from 18 to 24. And we even have a male representative because we felt like we needed an input from the males in regard to because there's they have wives and we needed that perspective also. So we have a well-rounded group of individuals. Also we have an elder representative on our board.
Excellent. I've looked at the list of board members. You've got a very distinguished group of people that really represent perspectives, you know, across tribal lines throughout the whole lower 48 as well as Alaska, right?
Yes, it's a very diverse group, and I'm proud to say that it's such a excellent working board. And what's really nice is they all like each other and care about each other.
That's tremendous. I mean, having been in some organizations where people didn't get along, I know you've probably had that in your background is too, Pam. It's wonderful to be with a team of people that are all singing off the same sheet and working together for a common goal.
It definitely is, and I think that's with women, you know, view that they are the caretakers in the Indian world, and that we spend time talking about taking care of ourselves, and then the things that we need to do for our family and for our tribal communities. So most of the work that we do is key towards that.
You know, I can imagine, Pam, many people tuning in today. In fact, I can't imagine who's tuning in today from Indian country that these ideas are not resonating with. People are saying, I mean, this sounds like, you know, great stuff. I mean, you're really championing some important issues in Indian country. And yet, I think there's probably some questions as to, you know, how can someone practically, or how can a tribe, or how can a tribal organization benefit from what your group is doing? After all, you're called a resource center. What resources are available at the National Indian Women's Health Resource Center?
Well, we have a website that individuals can access or call our 1-800 number, which is 1-800. I was looking for it on my brochure. It's 1-800-4, and then it's NIWHRC, or the letters with it. Actually, okay. It is on the website also, but we have identified.
So is it, Pam, excuse me for a minute. I'm just looking here at what
okay.
I've got. Is it the 1-866?
Yes, it sure
and then
is.
Four?
It's 1-866.
Okay, and then 4 NIWHRC.
Yes, that is okay. the 1-800 number. And we have developed some health education materials that individuals can access individually, or if they're like healthcare providers that mm-hmm. need to order, you know, a certain amount, the first 25 are free, and then there's minimal charge for the other ones. But some of the subjects are the key diseases that Indian women that we've identified that are risk for Indian women, and one is heart disease. We have mm-hmm. A consumer CD that has a slide presentation on it for group setting, and then we
wow.
have a healthy tips card that has a magnet on it that talks about heart health, and then when you might the symptoms of an Indian or a woman having a heart attack, mm-hmm. and some other ones are like an osteoporosis brochure, and there's a rising number of Indian women that have lupus, and this mm-hmm. is an immune system disease, and we have a pamphlet and brochure, more than just a brochure, it's like an 8-page pamphlet in regard to lupus.
Great.
And those are some key things that we have. We also have, as far as accessing training, we have a program that we're doing now on HIV and AIDS, and
mm-hmm.
Indian women are the just recently there's a trend that HIV is increasing in the in Indian women, and so we have put together a culturally appropriate prevention program, and it's called Honoring the Past, and the acronym PAST stands for preventing AIDS through strengthening our traditions. And
basically, wow, great.
This is incorporated in this is a 101 on HIV and AIDS. And the individuals can take this information and they can, in their communities, actually do their own trainings. So we are taking that out into Indian country. We've trained in the Minneapolis urban area, also at White Mountain Apache just recently. We're going to a tribe in California this summer, and we've trained here in Oklahoma. There's two groups in the southern part that represent about eight tribes, and then the north central that represents seven tribes that we have trained in this. And it's really, we're finding that there's a lot of people don't really, you know, HIV and AIDS has been around for 10 or 15 years, but really knowing the risk factors, the behavioral risk, and just even the body fluids that you can, that have the HIV virus, people are not aware of that. They really, the communities really engage in this, and they just feel that there's such a need to go out and especially work with the youth in getting this information to them.
So basically, let's say someone tuning in today, Pam, is hearing about this. They say, wow, this is tremendous. We have challenges in our community, you know, with getting the educational messages out about HIV and AIDS, and now I'm hearing about this program. Is this something that they really need to contact your organization and have someone physically come out and do a training, or are there materials that a tribal health director or a tribal health board could utilize? What's the best way of taking advantage of the good work you've done?
Well, there is a possibility that we could come out and do the training, but we actually have curriculum that we're disseminating, and they could take the manual and actually create their own workshop, because I use the term cookbook, but it actually tells you how to put the training on, and then it gives you all the materials, all the activities that go along with it, and many of this is it's set up to be hands-on activities where there's some interaction, and there's it's not just, you know, talking heads. It's not just lectures. There's a lot of interactive activities in all of our trainings that we put on, and the HIV is just one of those. We have a mentoring program, which is entitled Passing on Traditions, and it is a mentoring program for Native girls by Native women. And this is really we're really proud of this program. We have a video and a monograph that goes along with this, plus the curriculum. And the video actually gives testimonies and tells how the program is set up, and along with the, it's about an 8-page monograph. And then there's the training manual. So we have all kinds of materials that, if someone would want to implement something like this in their program, well, we actually have real graphic pictures to show them how we've done it, and then with the video. And actually, we can do a lot of telephone technical assistance with the individuals that want to do this. So it's not just like, you know, they would be out there on their own. We're available to talk to them about some of the things that they need. And in some cases, we can travel to their area. So there's at least two of these, and we have, quite a few more programs.
Great. We want to talk more about some of the exciting things that are available through Pam's organization. That's the National Indian Women's Health Resource Center. We've got more and contact information coming up in our next segment. I'm Dr. David DeRose. You're listening to American Indian Living on Life Talk Radio and Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service. Stay.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
Today's American Indian Living Radio program is sponsored in part by the Native Education and Health Initiative, also known as NAHI, a nonprofit organization established by Native Americans for Native Americans. In addition to sponsoring American Indian Living, NAHI produces a health publication and has initiated a series of programs to combat diabetes. Further information about NAHI is available at nahicharity.org. The Lifestyle Center of America is another American Indian Living sponsor. Located in South Central Oklahoma, the Lifestyle Center provides a variety of health services in Indian country, including residential diabetes treatment programs and their Wellspring DVD series, a prepackaged diabetes program suitable for home, workplace, or community center used by people of all races. Further information about the center is available at lifestylecenter.org or by phone at 1-800-596-5480.
Some important social statements by United States citizens today on policy.
To be a good American, you've got to like people, share things, and not scream at people. And you should also help them, and then you can share at them.
A statement on historical tradition and our form of government.
I love America because it got government full of people. And for the people, and for the people.
A statement on down-to-earth American idealism.
I like living in America because it means freedom. It means that you can do most stuff you want as long as it doesn't, like, hurt anybody, and you have to work hard to keep it.
America, a statement in summary.
I love America because everybody's equal. And when you play with other kids and they dunk you, you can dunk them back.
You're listening to a pre-recorded broadcast of American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE, 1-800-775-4673. Here again is your host.
Welcome back to American Indian Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. We're focusing today on the National Indian Women's Health Resource Center based in Tahlequah, Oklahoma. With me is the Executive Director, Pam Iron. Pam, you've been sharing some very exciting things with our listeners today.
Yes,
We want to move on and make sure that people, if they just tuned in, they have the contact information. If they want some of the HIV educational resources, things on osteoporosis, heart disease, or any of the many areas that your organization is working in, give us again the internet information and the toll-free phone number.
Okay. Our internet website address is www.niwhrc.org. And the toll-free number is 1-866-4 and then the letters N-I-W-H-R-C. And our hours are 8 to 5 Central Standard Time. We are headquartered here in Tahlequah, Oklahoma.
Very good. So if anyone listening today can just remember the National Indian Women's Health Resource Center, if you just remember that, it's just the initials, .org. That will get you to the website, niwhrc.org. And if you remember those initials, put the number 4 before them and 866 before that. So it's 1-866-4 and then N-I-W-H-R-C. You'll be able to call or access these resources through the internet. Now, Pam, I know a lot of your work in the educational area, in connecting people with their historical roots. You've taken a very close look at the whole issue of historical trauma. And when we mention that term in Indian country, most people immediately relate to what we're talking about. But we do have many listeners of the show who do not have Native American roots. And for their benefit, as well as those listening today, maybe from an urban setting where they don't have much connection with their tribal culture, can you share with us a little bit of background on this subject of historical trauma?
Yes, I'd be happy to. As I was developing a cultural competency training for one of our grants, the Breast and Cervical Cancer Cooperative Agreement grant that we had with CDC, I picked up on a term and did some research on historical trauma response. And I knew that there was something, that happened to Indian people, but I really didn't know that coined phrase until about 5 years ago. And mm-hmm. basically, the historical trauma response it's really said that past events shape your current reality, and it's mm-hmm. what happens when a group of people have 13 million of their ancestors exterminated, and it's mm-hmm. Victims of mass genocide. And there's mm-hmm. been a lot of studies, and one of the leading individuals in this is Dr. Maria Yellow Horse Braveheart, and she's a Lakota and associate professor of social work at the University of Denver. And basically, her study talks about that it's the after effects on a group of people who have been inflicted with cultural trauma. And the effects are really serious. It impacts the physical, emotional, mental, and social well-being of individuals, families, and the entire culture. So, mm-hmm. I guess in theory, it's like it's a collection of characteristics are formed in reaction to the trauma that a group of people have endured. And what happens is that the individuals actually identify with the pain and hurt that their ancestors endured, and they take that on. They feel guilty mm-hmm. because, they're alive. And many times we as Indian people don't even, recognize it or know this, why we have this feeling of depression or this feeling of being low-spirited or poor self-esteem. And what's mm-hmm. happening in many places is that this is being identified, and there's all of a sudden, you see on agendas, conferences, Indian health conferences, this will be one of the topics, which I'm really excited about, because there's such a need for people, not only non-Indians, but Indian people, to understand what this cultural trauma is about. It basically, it altered many of the individuals' identity, because your culture, when your culture is stripped from you, your whole core being or your values are not there, and mm-hmm. your self-image is devalued. And so the ancestors, a person takes on these feelings that about their ancestors.
I think it's interesting, Pam, that you're mentioning several important issues, and people who haven't either gone through some of these experiences or studied about them, they may say, well, this is all sounding very strange. One of the topics you mentioned is the survivor's guilt. And, we know this is a real phenomenon that individuals experience. In a catastrophic event, many times people will say, well, boy, aren't you glad that you survived this terrible ordeal? And yet someone actually feels guilty. Why didn't they die too? Somehow they don't feel right that they should have survived this terrible thing when friends or family members or other people close to them died. And it may be harder maybe hard for people to understand that, but then it becomes even harder when that's in your heritage, if you will, when you didn't actually have the loved ones die right around you, but this is in your history. So beside this aspect of survivor guilt, how does the whole experience of the negative attitudes toward Native American culture and how Indian people were, you know, pulled from their family, forbidden to speak their languages, does this all play a significant part in this cultural trauma as well?
It most definitely does. It's what has happened. It's not only the historical trauma, but the intergenerational trauma. For an example, the people that are, you know, my age, in their 50s and 60s, they probably had a parent or a grandparent that was taken away from their family and sent to boarding school. So the trauma exists for them because they, you know about this. And for an example, my grandfather was taken when he was about 8 years old from the Pueblo of Laguna and sent to the Carlisle Institute. Carlisle Institute in Pennsylvania was opened about 3 years, and it was, of course, the great experiment on, taking the Indian out of the Indians and acculturating a person. And what happened was that I had just thought, as growing up hearing this story, that it was only the Southwest Indians that were affected. But in fact, every single tribe all over the United States, all the Lakotas and Dakotas, the Cherokees, everyone had sent so many children, and they would travel by rail by themselves all the way to Pennsylvania, of course, in groups together. And my grandfather... He said that it felt like he was, you know, they traveled for like, I think, 8 days, and it was like he thought he was going to the end of the earth. But after this, the example of my grandfather was that he was away from his family 12 years. He was gone and finally returned as a young man, and he could not communicate with his mother because he spoke English and she only spoke Indian. So these are some of the traumatic things, you know, that have happened to, this is just an example that happened to many Indian children. And they really were stripped of their culture and, you know, couldn't talk their language, couldn't practice the things that they, you know, had grown up with. And so it left them, although they were taught, you know, the Western ways, they really, it caused them not to know, you know, not to have that core self-identity. So then if you don't have that, then it's passed down, you know, you don't know how to teach your children these things. So this is what happens causing this intergenerational trauma.
We're looking at some very, very important issues in Indian country. Pam Iron is helping us see the implication of these things as it relates to health, especially to women's health. We've got more exciting information, more details about resources that you may want to use. I'm Dr. David DeRose. Don't miss the remainder of today's edition of American Indian Living. Stay with us.
American Indian Living will continue in a moment. If you have questions or comments about today's pre-recorded broadcast, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673.
America's veterans have served our country in both war and peace.
It's because of people like you that we are free.
My class was learning about war and how hard it is.
I wanted to do something to let them know how I feel.
Now there is a way to thank them for helping keep America free. Log on to thankyouveterans.org and type a personal message of thanks.
Dear Dad, I've recently come to understand how important your service to America was, and I just wanted to say thank you.
There are 26 million veterans living in America today. From World War II to Afghanistan and Iraq.
We carry our experiences inside. It's nice to have someone say thanks.
Let a veteran know you appreciate their service. Log on to thankyouveterans.org, a public service of Paralyzed Veterans of America.
This is the Duchess of York. What's really important in your life? It's your family and your friends. But isn't it also your health? People who are overweight or obese are at a greater risk for illnesses such as cancer. Check your BMI or body mass index. The lower the number, the lower the risk. So lose weight in a healthy way. You'll lower your BMI number. Now, isn't that important? Visit the website of the American Cancer Society at www.cancer.org. You and your family and friends will be glad you did.
Thank you for listening to American Indian Living. If you missed some of the discussion, CD copies of today's show are available. CDs of previous broadcasts are also available. Our email address is AmericanIndianLiving@lifetalk.net. CD requests and comments can also be communicated by phone at 1-800-775-4673. That's 1-800-775-4673. Stay with us for the second half of today's program.
You're listening to a pre-recorded broadcast of American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE, 1-800-775-4673. Here again is your host.
Welcome back to American Indian Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. We're speaking today with Pam Iron. Pam is the Executive Director of the National Indian Women's Health Resource Center, NIWHRC. It's important to remember that name and those initials because those initials will get you to their website, www.niwhrc. It's also the key to remembering their toll-free number, 1-866, the number 4, and then NIWHRC. Pam, you've been talking to us about historical trauma and the historical trauma response. And I think as people have been listening, whether they're from Indian country or whether they're listening for the first time about some of these important Native American issues, people are saying, well, I can see, I can understand how these things would shape a person's identity, would affect how they feel today. But how does that affect health programs? How does that affect the kind of initiatives that your group is undertaking? Give us some insight into that.
Okay, well, one of the things that I've really felt in the studies that I've done and just my personal experience is that in order for a person to have well-being and health is that they have to be able to have their basic needs met, and they, you know, their physical, emotional, spiritual, and that's one of the things that happens if you are experiencing historical trauma or intergenerational trauma. Your spirituality is not there, your emotional health, and so you are depressed. There's a depression. A person might be suicidal, and their health is probably the last thing that they're able to address because they're just coping with life, trying to get by. And some of the things that have happened recently by the Indian community realizing this, that there's been healing circles that whole communities have actually started participating in, and it's really identifying the grief, accepting it, and working through it. And there seems to be one of the being able to reconnect with your spirituality has a tremendous healing impact. And I know that there's different programs that the Lakota people have been using, and it really is through healing circles and people talking and understanding this, and then they can move forward in their life. One of the things that the Centers for Disease Control asked me to develop, or in the process of working with non-Indian health professionals, we recognized that there needed to be some type of cultural sensitivity or cultural competency course that we could develop. And I was really excited about doing this. I'd always wanted to do it. And then when I started, it was kind of like, oh, where do you start? There's so many pieces to it. And what I always say about what the it's a one-day course, it's really just a Reader's Digest version of a Reader's Digest version because it's hard to share everything about a person's culture. And also because we are, each tribe, you know, has many different practices, and you can't do, you can't say that one way is the right way for everyone.
Right.
So keeping that in mind, and I worked with my staff here for about 6 months to figure out how to do this, we've come up with six components. And one of the main components is about historical trauma. Also, learning styles of American Indians. And really, by teaching this course or by training the non-Indian people, are able to understand, you know, the people that they're working with. And actually, I've had a lot of Indians in the course. And when they hear about, when they go through the historical trauma component, and we always do a closing, they always, you know, so at first I was kind of like, well, I wonder what, you know, Indian people will think of this.
Mm-hmm.
And they are able to say to me, now I know, you know, why I'm depressed, why I was depressed, and now I know, you know, why I'm one of those angry Indians. You know, I talk about... There's depression, or there's many times Indian people are angry and they don't even know why. And so they are able to identify that this is the reason that they've felt this way. And a lot of it is just understanding that. And that's what's really, they've told me that was the turning point in their life as far as being able to understand why they had this real gnawing feeling, you know, in their core about what happened, what, you know, what has happened to our people. So it really is, this is one of my favorite courses to teach. It's called Weaving Weaving the Threads of Culture. And just recently, and this is sort of how I met you, I co-authored a book on strategies for cultural competency for Indian health. And what this is about is really a study of six different ways that Indian organizations and tribes actually have put cultural competency programs or cultural sensitivity programs together for their staff. And it really documents, you know, there's not just one way to do this. It's really the way that your community is set up. And it gives people ideas on the barriers and shows the successes of programs and how they developed.
So would you say, Pam, that if someone listening today is... concerned about cultural competency issues, maybe they operate a tribal health clinic and they have a number of non-Indian providers, or whether it's other dealings they're having at a tribal level or in a tribal organization, is this book, you think, the good first step as far as dealing with cultural competency? Is it some resources that you have through the National Indian Women's Health Resource Center? Where would you point someone who's interested in doing more with this topic?
That would be one of the book that we developed, and the American Public Health Association actually published it. That would be a key resource, and because it also has a video with it, In this video, you're able to get an overview of all of the programs, and the people talk about, you know, their successes with it. They talk about their barriers, how long it took them to develop it, and it's actually documented in the book too. But this is one of the projects that I'm most proud of, because there was people throughout the United States that assisted us in putting this together. And it was a 2.5-year project, and it basically is for people to use to develop their cultural sensitivity or cultural programs, and how it tells how others have integrated them. So it's, you know, there's a program in Barrow, California. I'm trying to think of Cherokee, in an urban setting in Detroit. And it really shows just the different ways that these programs have addressed cultural competency.
Excellent. If you're interested in this book and you're tuning in today, just keep in mind it's published by the American Public Health Association. If you keep that in mind, that's an easy way to get access to the book. The title of the book we're referring to is Strategies for Cultural Competency in Indian Healthcare. And Pam Iron, who's been joining us today, co-authored the book with Mim Dixon. Again, Strategies for Cultural Competency in Indian Healthcare. Is there a better way to get the book than getting online and typing the title on American Public Health Association? I mean, can they call your office and get a copy or go to your website?
They can get one through the APHA. We have a few copies left, and if someone, you know, calls the next week or so, they can have a free copy. We sent them out to all of the universities and libraries in Indian country, and got an excellent response. They felt like it was a very worthwhile book to receive in their library. We sent them all out to all the tribal colleges too, so many people could go to their library and request it also, especially on the, you know, in the reservations. And we've given out over 700 books.
That's
and
great.
We're just about at the end, but they can get it on the APHA website if they don't get it from us.
Great. That's the American Public Health Association. Pam, I know there are people tuning in today who they're interested in your work, not just with cultural competency and HIV/AIDS. We've spoken quite a bit about both those issues. But you've mentioned some of the other projects that the National Indian Women's Health Resource Center has been involved with. If you, from your perspective in Indian health care and Indian health issues, especially in issues relating to women, looking at the big picture, if someone representing a tribe or a mother is listening today and concerned about the health needs of her family, what kind of resources out there would you say you want to make sure you take advantage of, or have someone in your community, your tribe, at your health clinic taking advantage of these things?
Well, I think for a woman, I really think that maybe two areas. The breast and cervical cancer is real important that people take advantage of their breast health programs. Indian women don't get breast or cervical cancer more than the other races of people. However, we have more deaths in the Indian community. More Indian women die from breast and cervical cancer, and it's because we don't detect it early enough. I wouldn't say preventable, but if it's detected early enough, then individual can live with it and they won't die.
Great message. Pam Iron will continue with us in our final segment of American Indian Living. Don't go away. You're listening today on Life Talk Radio Network, or on Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service. I'm Dr. David DeRose. We'll be back with our last segment in just a couple minutes.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
Today's American Indian Living radio program is sponsored in part by the Lifestyle Center of America. Located in South Central Oklahoma, the Lifestyle Center provides a variety of health services in Indian country, including residential diabetes treatment programs and their Wellspring DVD series, a prepackaged diabetes program suitable for home, workplace, or community center and used by people of all races. Further information about the center is available at lifestylecenter.org or by phone at 800-596-5480. American Indian Living is also sponsored in part by the Native Education and Health Initiative, known as NAHAI, a nonprofit organization established by Native Americans for Native Americans. In addition to sponsoring American Indian Living, NAHAI produces a health publication and has initiated a series of programs to combat diabetes. Further information about NAHAI is available at nahaicharity.org.
Canned vegetables, canned vegetables. Bring them
over here. Hey, Duncan, get over here. I need you to stay with me and your brother, okay?
I am.
Well, closer. Come on, help me out here, buddy. Excuse me. Duncan, you're blocking me out. Come
on. I want some bologna.
Not today.
But I want them.
Sorry. Duncan!
I want to put the number thing.
Too bad.
Mommy would let me.
Yeah, well, she's not here, okay? She's gone, and she's not coming back, and you're just going to have to deal with it like the rest of us, okay? Duncan.
On May 29th, Michelle Jimenez was killed by a drunk driver. She left behind her husband and four children. Drinking and driving is a crime that kills abruptly, but the pain lasts forever. Friends don't let friends drive drunk. A message from the U.S. Department of Transportation, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to a pre-recorded broadcast of American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE. 1-800-775-4673. Here again is your host.
Welcome to our final segment of today's edition of American Indian Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. With me today is Pam Iron. Pam is the executive director of the National Indian Women's Resource Center. She's Health Resource Center. She's been sharing with us some very exciting health insights and health resources that her group has developed. Pam, we were speaking before the break about cancer in Indian country, and you mentioned your special concern for breast and cervical cancer, with that claiming more lives in Indian country, at least relatively speaking, largely because women either are not getting the opportunity or not taking the opportunity of having screening so that these cancers can be picked up early. Do you have a specific program or resources through your center that would help a tribe or help a health center encourage more women to take advantage of screening for these female cancers?
Yes, we do. We have a cooperative agreement with Centers for Disease Control, and we actually provide a technical assistance to the tribal programs that actually have this funding and the state programs, and all the states have breast and cervical cancer programs. And unfortunately, they haven't done a real good job until recently in working with tribes. And some of the states that are now doing an excellent job are Montana, North Dakota. South Dakota is starting a collaboration, Arizona. And these are just a few of the states that they're working collaboratively with tribes. And there is more that, you know, can be done. But an individual, if their tribal health program does not offer these screenings, and they all offer the pap smear or the cervical, and they also all offer the breast exam. It's sometimes the mammogram that's not available, or you have to travel a long way to get it. But basically, the state health departments, if they could contact them or their local county health department, they generally can get into these programs. Unfortunately, sometimes they think that their Indian health program should be serving them, so they may, they might not be as accessible as they should be. But a lot of that has changed just by some education that all the tribes and states have been doing with each other. One is the colon cancer. I might just mention that there, a person should be screened for colon cancer. A woman at the age of 55, she should start receiving screening. And if the doctors aren't, telling her about the screening, she needs to ask her doctor to be screened for colon cancer. Mm-hmm. The next thing I'd like to talk about is that our organization is 10 years old in 2008, and it just all of a sudden one day I thought, my goodness, we're going to be 10 years old in 2008.
Congratulations, by the way.
Yeah. Well, thank you. It was really kind of exciting, and we started, the board of directors started planning a way that we could celebrate our 10 years of work. And what we're going to start out with is that in 2008, we will be announcing a scholarship for an Indian youth. We're going to start out with one, and we hope to each year add a second scholarship and to move it up to being able to give out 5 scholarships a year.
Great.
And then the next thing that we're planning on doing is we will be having a conference in June of 2008. We're really excited about that. And it is going to highlight all of the programs that we have developed. It's going to be based on the circle of life, and we will be dealing with working with the mental, the physical, the spiritual, and we'll be able to break those down into tracks, and also have all the programs over the past 10 years be part of the workshop. And so we're really excited about sharing these, because all of them have, it won't just be talking, we will actually have materials, we'll have the curriculum, and they will be interactive type workshops. In other words, you'll hear about it, and then they'll do an activity that's part of that that actual curriculum, so that they can really have hands-on experience of how these programs operate.
That's
and the
tremendous.
The last thing that we'll be doing at the celebrating our 2008 anniversary is giving out an award, a service award, to an outstanding Indian woman. So we're real proud to be able to do that also. And this will be one of the highlights at our conference.
Well, it sounds like some exciting things are happening in June 2008. Will that be right in Tahlequah, Oklahoma?
It's actually going to be in Albuquerque. And it's going to be at the Marriott there in Albuquerque. We felt like that was kind of a central location, and actually the National Indian Women's, we're actually incorporated in the state of New Mexico. I was living there when we incorporated, but that wasn't the only reason. It was because in the state of New Mexico, your board of directors can live outside of the state, and in many other states, they can't. So that was one reason that the national, since we were national in scope, that we incorporated there in New Mexico. So it's kind of our home.
Well, great. Well, coming back to your roots as well as an organization there in New Mexico, June 2008 there in Albuquerque, Pam Iron has been sharing with us some exciting things. And if you can't take advantage of this exciting conference in June 2008, Pam, people can call you anytime, at least Monday through Friday, at the National Indian Women's Health Resource Center. Why don't you give that contact information out again for our listeners?
Oh, okay. It's www.niwhrc.org, niwhrc.org, and the toll-free number is 1-866-4-NIWHRC. And we invite you to call us, and we will talk to you about any of our programs and any training or technical assistance that you would like to visit with us about.
Great. You know, the thing that is so useful about your website, for those who are listening today who've never been there, you do have a number of these fact sheets and other resources you can download. As we are, you know, speaking here, I just downloaded the fact sheet you have on systemic lupus erythematosus, often just called lupus. But you've got very detailed statistics on the different regions of the country and what you'd expect to see as far as the number of cases of lupus, and yet the significantly greater numbers of Native American women that actually have lupus. So this kind of information is readily available there on your website. Do you find a lot of people accessing the things you have there on the Internet?
We really do. We have a lot of individuals, we can tell by the count, that access our website. And also we have a lot of students, young American Indian students that are doing papers that use our website.
That's great. Pam, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule and sharing with us some of the exciting things happening with the National Indians Women's Health Resource Center.
Well, I really enjoyed it. This has been a pleasure to talk about our program.
For those of you tuning in today who want more information, again, the website is www.niwhrc.org. Those are the initials of National Indian Women's Health Resource Center. Phone number 1-866, the number 4-NIWHRC. For all of us at American Indian Living, representing Life Talk Radio and Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service, I'm Dr. David DeRose, wishing you the very best of health.
Thank you for listening to American Indian Living. We hope today's program has contributed to your living a healthy life. American Indian Living Radio is brought to you by the Native Education and Health Initiative in partnership with the Lifestyle Center of America and Life Talk Radio. American Indian Living is also distributed through the public radio satellite system by American Indian Radio on Satellite, a service of Native American Public Telecommunications.